And we're here on game day. It's kind of a crime to fade out on Bon Jovi, but we have to. Well, and welcome you as your host, David Morisuti, here with Matt Teague and Austin Owens, ready to talk some Leafs hockey. Thank you for joining us. Guys, it's back. Hockey is now back in Toronto. How are we feeling about this?
Well, it's the best. It was a long summer for Toronto sports fans with the Blue Jays seasons not quite going the way that they had hoped. But hockey's back and basketball's soon to follow, and the sports seasons are quickly changing on us once again. And yeah, it just seems like just yesterday that we were watching the Preds and Penguins in the Stanley Cup final, and now we're counting down the days till October the 4th.
Yeah. Yep. October 4th.
There you go.
Austin, it may not have been the game the Leafs had wanted, losing 6-2 to the Ottawa Senators, but...
Ooh, boy, was it not the game they wanted.
But we did get to see Austin Matthews score and William Nylander as well.
We also got to see Austin Matthews with a letter on his jersey, which a Leaf fan should get used to over the next couple of years. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah, Babcock was asked about that after the game, and he's just like, it's a letter. Yeah. We need three assistant captains.
Yeah, they literally need to put three A's on three jerseys. So,
but you know, the media
just throw up the hope in the air, and Babcock just immediately swats it down.
Twitter had fun with it.
Oh yeah,
everyone
absolutely.
Definitely, it's something to talk about.
Everybody, don't panic. Don't panic.
I mean, people are ready to kind of put Curtis McIlhenny down to the bus to the AHL after.
I thought you were going to say they were making Curtis McIlhenny the next captain.
No, people are ready to doubt Curtis McIlhenny after. People forget that if it wasn't for him, the Leafs would never have made the playoffs last season, because that last game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, people forget he made that save on Sidney Crosby.
It's fair.
Connor Brown scored that goal, but they might not be in the playoffs without that save by McIlhenny. So
yeah.
You never know.
Him, and without him just generally filling time when Anderson was out.
Yeah, he was
stretch, right?
He was stellar last year.
Yeah, he was
good. He was shaky at times, but he's what you want out of a backup.
So it's safe to say that to give Gary Sparks the backup job right now, maybe a little too early.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's totally unfair to judge it off of one game, especially the first game that these men have played competitively in a few months, right? They're still trying to get back into form, and if you saw the game or saw any highlights, it was quite evident as well that the Leafs' blue line was not exactly in McIlhenny's corner last night, so to say. They were struggling. Ottawa just looked like the faster team. Mike Hoffman's second goal, he just blew by everyone. It was like they all had concrete attached to their ankles, all the blue jerseys or something. So can't put it all on McIlhenny. I mean, 4 goals on the first 9 shots is not the way you want to start off when you're trying to earn a backup role, but it is a team game, and he will get another opportunity, I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, the Leafs, obviously, if you look at the lines today, they really have their A lineup in. They're playing Ottawa in the second half of the back-to-back, and that's sort of how the preseason goes. You get one team that plays a lot of guys that are hoping to crack the squad against Ottawa, who you saw who had their stars in, Mark Stone and Hoffman, just picking the Leafs apart last night. And it's a little bit of a different story tonight. I mean, they've got, I think, Bozak, Kadri, Komarov, Marner, JVR, Bozak. They're all in the lineup tonight. And I'm not too sure who's starting. I just saw that on the way in that they're going to have their A lineup in, so it could be a very different story. Matthews and Nylander not in, though.
Yeah, Matthews and Nylander playing last night, unlikely to play tonight. And then you got likely it's going to be Frederik Andersen and Kasimir Kaskisuo as the duel in net tonight. I expect Andersen to get the start and then Kaskisuo to come in halfway through the game. Another player making his debut tonight in a Leafs uniform will be Patrick Marleau. He will be playing on a line with Nazem Kadri and Leo Komarov. So that's the early indication from Mike Babcock that Zach Hyman will be playing with Matthews potentially at the start of the season, although it wouldn't surprise me if Babcock maybe tries to change things up.
I'd really like to see Connor Brown on that line with Matthews and Nylander. Mm-hmm. I think he's really good on the cycle, and I think he's a better scorer at this point than Hyman is. I know Hyman's the guy that gets the pucks, but... Is Connor Brown really that far off? Like, he does plays the same role, just on a different line.
Speaking of Kadri, how big of a pain would this line be to play against if you had Kadri, Hyman, and Komarov going for your checking line?
That's an energy line.
Checking line with a very good ability to score the goals mm-hmm. as well.
That is the definition of a checking and energy line.
Yeah.
Those three.
They will piss a lot of people off.
I just think Mike Babcock wants... I mean, Marlowe's a pretty decent defensive player. He's not the pest that Kadri and Komarov are, but I think he likes the speed because Kadri's not exactly the quickest mover on the ice, especially Komarov. So I think they just wanted a speed element to that line because, Matthews and Nylander are great skaters, Nylander especially. And then you got the second line where you have Marner, who is, again, probably the better skater. I think he just likes to have that one element of speed. Another thing to note tonight is Kasperi Kapanen will be playing the left wing because he is a right shot, so they are playing him on his off wing. So that's definitely something to watch for. I know a lot of people are looking at the Leafs' defense. James Van Riemsdyk is on his final year of his contract. They did try, apparently, to move him at the draft to try to get a defenseman, and it didn't work out. So that's something to watch for as well as camp goes along, although it's tough to expect a player like JVR to get traded right in camp, not playing the season with the team. So I don't know where that will go, but that's something definitely to watch for. Austin and myself will be at the game tonight.
Just wanted to make a note real quick. Kristen Shilton, TSN's beat reporter for the Leafs, says the defensive pairings for tonight is going to be Gardner and Andreas Borgman, the Swedish signing this offseason. Martin Marincin and Vincent Laverde. Laverde was another AHL signing in the offseason. Renat Valiev and Justin Hall, two guys that will probably end up with the Marlies. And they get to run 4D pairs in the preseason, so Andrew Nielsen and Roman Polak will play together tonight.
Yeah, and... I don't think Nikita Zaitsev played last night.
So. No, there was a note here. It says he was slated to be in the Leafs practice group today, but he's not. They've brought back Sam Jardine to skate with the team. So I guess he'll be a game time decision if he's going to be there. I don't know if there's an injury or if he's just away for the team. There's no word yet.
So that's something definitely to watch for. Kalle Rosén, he had his flashes, I guess you... Fair to say, after the game, Mike Babcock kind of only looked at a couple of players and said, he looked good. And then he kind of gave a long pause. So he said, I think it was Dermott and Rosén,
yeah.
And then it was just a very long... I mean, it's tough to say that everyone had a good game when it's a 6-2 loss.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to say that Dermott and Rosén were the ones that stood out on the back end, I think that gives Babcock a bit of a... It gives a bit of an inclination that maybe a guy like Martin Marincin is going to have to really not have a bad camp if he wants to have his spot back.
Yeah, his absolute best.
Now we're getting the second part of that Swedish duel that came here in Andreas Borgman. Many are expecting.
He's going to be exciting.
He's going to be the guy that people are going to be more excited about him than Rosén. That's what I was led to believe.
I think it's safe to say Rosen's probably the guy that you would look at to play, to possibly take over Dermott as the sixth defenseman on this team. But Borgman's the guy that's the more exciting of the two. He's the SHL Rookie of the Year. It's guys like Victor Hedman have won that. Erik Karlsson, I mean, that's pretty good company to keep.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch those two tonight. I think the storyline should be looking at the Leafs' defense throughout training camp because the four lines other than where Marlowe and Hyman are going to play, I think they're pretty much set. I know people are looking at that final spot on the fourth line between Kapanen, Levo, and Soshnikov. But this Leafs defense, they have, I think, that third pairing is just wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Because, Riley and Haynes, you're going to play together. You expect Gardner and Zaitsev to be back again. And then that third pairing is a guessing game.
Yeah, it is. And we saw a lot. Liljegren, it might... He most likely will probably be going back to Sweden, but we still never know. But last night, I thought he had an okay game, almost 16 minutes of ice, just a minus one in a 6-2 loss. That helps. He had a beautiful stretch pass from his own corner all the way
to the
blue line. Unfortunately, the recipient of the pass was Matt Martin, who went in and did his best to create a scoring attempt. Is that
what it's called? His best, the backhander off the corner boards.
He did his best, but just that vision, and just sort of the guts to go up the middle like that, and have that confidence to see the lane, and have that split second decision to say, "Yep, I'm going to move the puck through that lane," and he did it perfectly. So that was a highlight from him, and yeah, like you said, that D spot is wide open, that final pair. And so guys like Connor Carrick that were there last year, he's going to have to work twice as hard to keep himself in contention there as well.
I think Connor Carrick's probably safe, but who do you guys think, if we can make a prediction early, who do you think's the 6D man?
If I were to say Carrick was that right side, I mean,
I'd say he's number five.
Roman Polak is also going to make a case as well for that bottom pairing.
I'd be cool with Roman Polak at seven. That is their backup D.
Yeah.
Him and Marincin is 7 and 8 because they carried 2 D men last year.
My early prediction, and it's been my prediction since basically the Marlies playoff run, has been Travis Dermott. He's very poised. He's got good speed. He's just a sound mobile defenseman, which is what you want from your third. You don't want a flashy guy. You want a guy that's just going to play solidly for you. Whether Roman Polak, he could also, I mean, Mike Backhawk has a soft spot for him. It's hard not to after what he's that guy that is the road warrior. He's going to give you the gritty that you need, the grit you need. So I wouldn't put it past me to say that Polak is going to give every opportunity as well to try to make the lineup. So those are, I would say Dermott is the favorite just based on what I've seen in the offseason and all the promise around him.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that, honestly, not to cop out on it, but it's the Leafs clearly lack size at the back end. It's great to have skilled puck-moving defensemen like Riley and Gardner and Zaitsev and with some offensive upside, but when it comes down to it, you need that defenseman who's wing that you just do not want to skate down, and Roman Polak has always been that player, you know, keeping forwards aware and guessing, and they always know where Polak is on the ice when they're on. And I think you need a presence like that, especially with still so many young kids in the lineup. There's got to be a vet that can, you know, bang bodies around and assert some order into things when they get a little bit chaotic. And then, yeah, Travis Dermott, I think he's done everything to prove that he deserves at least a chance to start out up there. That World Juniors experience can go a lot further, I think, than people think. I know it was a while ago, but it playing on a stage like that, a best-on-best competition, can go a long way and instill a lot of confidence into a young player like Dermott. And, yeah, like I said, I think he's done everything he needs to do. Just keep working hard, and whether his time comes this year or next, it'll be here soon enough, and I'd like to see Dermott get a chance.
Yeah, so the Leafs will play their first preseason home game against Ottawa. Then they'll bring in Buffalo on Friday, then Buffalo again on Saturday for back-to-back. Two games against Montreal, one in Quebec, and then they finish off their preseason against the Red Wings with a back-to-back. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we wrap up this first segment on the Leafs and just maybe someone that maybe people aren't talking about that is not getting their due that should be as the preseason rolls along?
That's an interesting question.
It's a real thinger because almost everybody is talked about and everybody's been with all the media attention, everyone's going to get a name, but is there somebody that maybe you've seen that maybe is just like, we're not giving this guy his due?
Well, I think we've said a lot about Jeremy Bracco, but I'd like to see it come into fruition. I think if he got, you know, some opportunity, I'm sure he will coming up here. That'd be excellent because we've talked a big game up from him, but now it's time to see what he can bring to the ice.
Yeah, he's going to have every opportunity this year. Sheldon Keefe likes to have his star players out there. He plays them in all situations. Kasperi Kapanen killed penalties for them last year, so he's not afraid to just throw skill guys out to learn. And the Marlies are a great team, so, I mean, they're not worried about having their checkers out there to kill penalties. They can teach Bracco how to kill penalties, how to play. He already knows how to play on the power play. We saw that in the rookie tournament, and we've seen it from him in the highlights he's had. So he's going to be good. Brooks is going to be good. And, I mean, that Marlies team is going to be one to watch again this year. They are firing on all cylinders again.
Who's your guy, Austin? Just a quick 30 seconds. Who do you think?
Brooks.
For just a guy in Leafs camp that maybe is not getting his due, that maybe we should be keeping an extra eye on.
I would say probably Chris Mueller. I do really like him, and that might be a name that not a lot of Leaf fans know. He had a 70-point year, close to 70 points in the AHL last year with Tucson. He's similar to Mike Sislo in the fact that the Marlies just brought in a 30-year-old to sort of shore up their lineup and get a score down the middle. I think if Dominic Moore needs a couple nights off or if some injury comes up, he's going to be a guy that's looked at. Because Freddie Gauthier is obviously going to be out for about a month, I'd say, or if not a couple months. So he's a guy to keep an eye on as possibly a call-up. Sort of not to the same degree, sort of what Trevor Moore did when he came up. He was the Marlies captain, but filled in as sort of the 13th forward or 14th forward when the Leafs needed him.
All right. Well, we're going to end the first segment on that note. But in the next segment, we are happy to have a guest, for our first guest on the show, which is Keegan Matheson from MLB.com for some Blue Jays talk. Ooh. As Jose Bautista, kind of his swan song here in Toronto. But we're going to talk to Keegan about that and some other baseball talk here on Game Day. The Argos look to make it two in a row as they welcome the Montreal Alouettes at BMO Field on Saturday, September 23rd. Kickoff is at 7 o'clock. Tickets are available at argonauts.ca or on Ticketmaster. Plus, you can catch the game on TSN or on the radio at TSN 1050. This is Argos Football.
The third annual Invictus Games kicks off September 23rd and runs until September 30th in Toronto. The games were created by Prince Harry, and the inaugural Invictus Games took place in London in the fall of 2014 and attracted more than 400 competitors from 13 nations. Invictus Games competitors are the men and women who have come face to face with the reality of making a sacrifice for their country. They are the mothers, fathers, husbands, and wives who have put their lives on the line and have suffered life-changing injuries. The games shine a spotlight on the sacrifices these men and women have made, serving their country, and their unrelenting drive to overcome. You can catch the games at several venues around the city, including the Air Canada Centre, Mattamy Athletic Centre, Distillery District, the Toronto Pan Am Centre, just to name a few. The Invictus Games is about much more than just sport. It captures hearts, challenges minds, and changes lives. Maple Leafs off to a tough start on the ice. I'm Matt Teague with your Centennial Sports Update. Maple Leafs lose their opening preseason game 6-2 to the Ottawa Senators at Canadian Tire Centre last night. Auston Matthews, William Nylander scored the goals for the Leafs. Rematch goes tonight at the Air Canada Centre. Toronto Maple Leafs forward Joffrey Leupel has until Thursday at 5 p.m. to get his second medical opinion from the NHL Players Association if he believes himself healthy enough to play this season. Blue Jays are back on the diamond tonight to open up a three-game set against Kansas City at Rogers Centre. Marcus Stroman looks for his team-leading 12th victory of the season as he takes on Sam Gavaglio. First for everything, as Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw surrendered the first Grand Slam over 288 career starts to Phillies outfielder Aaron Alter last night. Phillies win that one 4-3. Joining the boys next on Game Day is Keegan Matheson of MLB.com.
And we're back here on Game Day. Thank you for joining us for the second segment. And we are happy to have joining us today Keegan Matheson from MLB.com, the associate reporter. Keegan, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. So we got the Blue Jays finishing up their home schedule this week. You're obviously covering the last final six games there. Kind of bittersweet knowing how the season's gone, knowing that this is going to be the final time you see the Blue Jays at home?
Bittersweet, relieving. I'm not sure what the politically correct answer is, but it's been a trying season. It's been a very long season, I feel, for the Jays. It's amazing to think it's only been 6 months, given the struggles they've had and some of the ups and downs. But it's for a lot of people, I think they're ready for the season to end after the last couple of years the Blue Jays have had a lot more success. But it's been about 2018 for a while now, and I think that's what the last couple of weeks of the season are going to be about too, kind of moving everything forward into next year with some momentum and a little more clarity.
Well, just before we get into 2018, there's one last little storyline everybody's talking about here this week especially, which is Jose Bautista. You know, this is potentially, most are saying, the final time we'll likely see him in a Blue Jays uniform. Most are probably saying that him coming back next season is very unlikely. What are you looking forward to in this last six games from him, and what are some of your favorite moments if you could go back in his tenure with the Blue Jays and kind of just pick one that stood out for you?
Other than the bat flip.
Outside of the bat flip. I think you know, it's probably safe to say he'll be playing every game this last homestand. John Gibbons is a guy that recognizes those things for veteran players and likes to see them sent off the right way, especially in his final home games here in Toronto. And, you know, it hasn't been the season Bautista wanted, hasn't been the season anyone wanted for Bautista, obviously, but, you know, age catches up to people, especially in baseball, and we've seen that with Bautista's bat speed this year, a little behind on some pitches, not making the consistently hard contact, and that's fine. You know, it happens to guys who are 36, 37. And for Bautista in his career, you know, yes, he's had the big moments, the home run, the bat flip, the home run in Kansas City was another great one. But, you know, I think what I'll remember most from his tenure here is just the story of how he came to be. You know, when he was traded to Toronto, it didn't register on anybody's radar. It was a nothing trade. A deal for maybe a fourth or fifth outfielder. They traded a backup catcher for him from the minor leagues. And it's one of those trades you see 100 of each year. Nothing was expected from it anywhere close to this. And he really blossomed in his late 20s, like we've seen with Donaldson, like we've seen with Encarnacion before as well. So he was the reason to watch in a lot of seasons that were pretty bad otherwise. You think of that 54 home run season, those big offensive years he had, kind of like Carlos Delgado before him. Even when the team wasn't great, there was at least one reason. Roy Halladay's another guy. There was that one reason to watch. And that was Bautista for a long time, and nobody expected it. It wasn't supposed to happen that way, but it did, and he's had a great career here. You'll see him up on the level of excellence there soon enough.
Obviously, Bautista's been a staple of this organization for a really long time now. He's going to be a storyline going into the offseason about where he might end up. Where are some places you see him possibly landing, and what kind of money do you think it would be expected for him to get?
You know, for me, that is the most interesting storyline of the offseason in terms of, you know, the world I work in. Because, you know, is he coming back to Toronto? No, that's extremely unlikely. But does he land anywhere at this point is a real question. For Bautista, his market last offseason was not big. It was not deep. There were not a lot of teams really jockeying for his services. That stock has fallen dramatically now, and for a right-handed power hitter whose power is questionable and who doesn't have defensive value, where is that going to land? And if you're Bautista, what are the two things you're still chasing in your career? Well, A, a championship, and B, even though most players don't want to say it, money. You want money and championships. Who is going to pay him much at this point? Maybe he'll get an offer of 1 year, you know, $3, $4, $6 million, but does he want that after what he has been making? And if he wants to chase a championship, are the Dodgers or the Cubs or the Astros going to offer Bautista a contract? He doesn't fit there. Good teams don't have room for him. Maybe somebody like the Phillies, the Rays, a team that is out of it has a spot, kind of like Michael Saunders last year. He finished the year so badly, but still got a starting gig that he lost eventually, but on a poor team. So there's really not a logical fit that lines up and you say, okay, easy. It's going to be a strange offseason. Maybe he lands somewhere, but there's a legitimate chance that this is it for Bautista.
How much do you think that his defensive regression is going to cost him opportunity in terms of, just because in the National League it'll be hard to field him, obviously no one's going to want to put him in right field in the National League, so maybe he could find a home at first base for a team, but it almost seems as though he'll have to make do in the American League somehow. And like you said, a lot of the contending teams already have pretty quality DHs or not necessarily looking for that type of player. So do you think that's going to also really impact his chances?
Well, that's a great point, because it cuts the league in half right away. Maybe you throw in a few NL teams, call it 16 or 18 teams you're down to at this point.
Yeah.
He could go the route of a Carlos Beltran, maybe. Mm-hmm. His New York years, where he was, you know, DH'd a lot, but you could throw him in right field if you needed to tinker your lineup. Bautista honestly has looked pretty good at third base when he's needed to be there. He's not going to be your everyday guy, but you can throw him there. You can throw him at first base and move him around. Maybe that, you know, I hesitate to use the word utility with a defender like him, but you know, move him around like that on a team that has some holes. But that defensive value, it's you know, it's something that we don't talk about much in Toronto, I think, because you know, the heart gets in the way. You don't want to rag on the great Jose Bautista for his defense, but everybody knows what it is. His arm has come back this year a little bit with a healthy shoulder, but his range getting to balls, fielding balls off the hop, it's, you know, it's not bashing on the guy. It's just obvious. Mm-hmm. It's not there. And that's always been okay, because his bat has been incredible. Now that's not the case. So if you're another team, you're going to look at this in a bit of a heartless manner. If you are the Miami Marlins, if you are the Texas Rangers, it doesn't matter that he is the great Jose Bautista. He's just Jose Bautista to you. And he is his numbers. He is the facts of who he's become when you look at him. And I don't think that's going to be favorable to him. And I think you're dead on. The number of teams he appeals to does shrink because of that defensive value.
Right.
So as he kind of finishes his career at the Blue Jays, where would you rank him, not just among all-time Blue Jays, but maybe among the positional players of all time for the Blue Jays? Where would you put Jose?
Well, I think you need to put him up in that top group. You know, those guys that you talk about, I know Roberto Alomar is the great guy, and you've got your great sluggers like Delgado, but he's at least in that upper echelon conversation. And bias is always going to come into this, of course. There's recency bias right now with Bautista. Are we overranking him because it's recent, or are we putting too much weight into this bad season? I don't know. There's also a bias with Roberto Alomar from people who saw him play. He was their guy. If you were covering the team in the early 90s or watching the team, Robbie Alomar was your guy, even though there was only five seasons there. So I think he is going to be considered, you know, after we have a chance to breathe, get a couple of years away from this, he'll be considered in that top, you know, 5-10 positional players in Blue Jays history. He'll be on the level of excellence, and you know, it would be nice to see him stay involved with the organization as well. You know, like Robbie Alomar has, like Delgado has, these, you know, whether it's as a roving instructor or an advisor, something. But he's a big part of Toronto, a big part of, frankly, baseball in Canada coming back a little bit, because that's what's happened with these last couple of years. It's really sparked baseball in Canada again.
Absolutely. So switching from the outfield now, maybe a little bit to the infield, someone that we wanted to ask you about was Richard Urania. He came on the scene, had a great first 8-10 games or so, and people seem to be on Twitter, Blue Jays fans, hopping on this wagon and almost pushing guys like Troy Tulowitzki out the door. And obviously the last couple weeks, he's, you know, 1-for-20, his strikeout rate's now almost at 37%. He's come way back down to earth. What do you think about Urania, and do you think it's almost a blessing for Blue Jays fans and for guys like Troy Tulowitzki that he has digressed and we're not overhyping him too early? He's only 21 years old, and we're not pushing Tulowitzki out the door just yet. What do you think about his play and about the, I guess, the future in the middle infield?
You know, he's still so young. He didn't even play a game in AAA, and the first few games, they were great. I mean, get your hits, your walk-off, that's fantastic. He was getting fastballs over the plate because he's a 21-year-old, of course. But, you know, when that was happening, I didn't want to be the horrible pessimist saying, hey, everyone, you know, listen to me, the great smart one. This isn't going to last. Like, that's no fun. Nobody benefits from that. But at the same time, I've seen him play 100 games in the minors, and, you know, who he was early in this hot streak didn't really match up with who he was in the minors. He is somebody who swings at pretty close to everything, expands the zone a lot, and strikes out. He walks about as much as Kevin Pillar does when you look at his walk rate. So yeah. There's a lot of growth that needs to take place there. But at the same time, he is a guy that could be an above average offensive shortstop in the majors. You know, that tool is there. He's just 21 and he's very raw. So he's part of the future, I think, in the Blue Jays' middle infield. Frankly, he could do another 2 years in the minors, and he's still just 23. You know, there's no rush there. Guerrero Jr., Bichette, of course, are going to be a big part of that. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. will be another big part. So from this group of, you know, four or five guys, even if two or three really click, I think you're happy. And obviously Bichette and Guerrero look like they're going to really click. So even if you get a supporting guy out of that or a utility player, you know, Ureña has the skill to be that, but the skill needs to match up to the consistency. And I think what we've seen is a very talented guy, but a very young guy, and it's going to be streaky.
Well, now as the Blue Jay season comes near an end, people will be looking at where the playoff scenarios look out to, especially both with the AL wildcard and then you got the NL wildcard. What are kind of your early predictions of what you see going on in the playoffs and heading into the postseason?
Well, you know what? When we look at the teams headed for the playoffs, obviously every year the playoff teams are good because baseball doesn't allow that many teams into the playoffs. This isn't groundbreaking. But this year especially, I think you've just got some real juggernauts going into the playoffs. You have the Dodgers, who bottomed out for a while, but they're a great baseball team. You have Houston, who can go up against any pitcher. You have Cleveland, who just finished one of the greatest runs in the history of baseball. Boston can go up against anybody. The Yankees can beat anybody. The Nationals are at 90 wins right now. And then the Arizona Diamondbacks are the best team that nobody cares about, frankly. How often do you hear the words Arizona Diamondbacks in common baseball discourse? It's not often for me. So I think right now you're still looking at a team maybe out of the AL like a Cleveland or a Houston. But the NL talent is there too. I really think this is going to be one of the most interesting playoffs we've had in a long time. And that AL wildcard race will be interesting going in too. The Twins with Byron Buxton, the Angels with Mike Trout. It'll be nice to see one of those guys on the big stage.
I just want to ask your opinion on the first round of the playoffs. Do you like the best of five and then 7-7 format, or do you think maybe they should just be all straight seven? Because sometimes I just personally think, you know, you play such a long season, then you're going up first round, best of five, and if teams are burning guys in the wild card game, pitchers in the wild card game, now you got your second guy in that series, and it just seems like it could go either way. Baseball's such a crazy, unpredictable game. Do you think the 3 out of 5 series is okay, or would you like to see 7-game series all across the board? What's your opinion on that?
I'd always like to see 7 games because that introduces the variable of bringing back the top end of your rotation again. You can still do that in a 5-game, of course, with one guy, maybe two, if it goes a full series. But that, for me, is one of the best parts of playoff baseball, trying to bring back your ace or forcing him into a game in a bullpen role in game 6. Things like that are really cool. But really, if I could change anything about the playoffs, I still don't like the 1-game wild card play-in. And I don't know how you fix that. Mm-hmm. It is one of the best things that baseball has done in a long time for the regular season because everybody now has a chance. So it's more competitive. The trade deadline is better. It's had a great impact. But you can get to the wild card play-in after playing a full great season. You could be the Yankees or you could be the Diamondbacks. Go in and your pitcher has a bad day, you're done. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's hard to make it perfectly fair, which is why the best team doesn't always win the championship, et cetera, but it's better than it was, I think, but there's still always room for tinkering.
All right, well, we want to thank you again for joining us today, and hopefully Bautista gives you something to write about this weekend. Make sure you guys all follow Keegan on Twitter at Keegan Matheson. And just want to thank you again. And hopefully you enjoy your last series here with the Blue Jays at home.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, all right, Keegan. Thank you. And that was Keegan Matheson from MLB.com. When we come back, we will be looking at the tournament, 12 tournament. We'll finish up wrapping up the baseball season and then look at some other things, look at it in the MLB world next on Game Day. And here with the Centennial News Update, here's Austin Owens.
Thank you, David. U.S. President Donald Trump made his debut at the United Nations on Monday. During his debut speech, Trump threatened to, quote, totally destroy North Korea if they don't stray away from nuclear weapons.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
This comes just days after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un fired a second missile over Japan. Hurricane Maria continues its ravaging of Dominica. In just one day, the storm was raised from a Category 1 to a Category 5 storm. The storm is carrying winds of up to 160 miles per hour as it moves towards Puerto Rico. And that's your news for today. Back to Game Day on Centennial Sports Radio. The Toronto Observer and the East York Observer are publications run solely by Centennial College journalism students that highlight news from around the city of Toronto, as well as the community of East York. Now the Observer is on YouTube. Check out broadcasts from the students, as well as coverage of the North American Indigenous Games and local stories from Centennial College's sports journalism grads. Hop on the Observer's YouTube page today and get the latest news right away.
We're back here on the final segment of Game Day. Matt Teague, David Morisuti, and Austin Owens here. We just want to thank Keegan again for coming on. It was some great baseball talk, and we wanted to continue with some of that. So I want to touch on Tournament 12. For those who don't know, Tournament 12 is the Canadian amateur baseball tournament that comes once a year at Rogers Centre. I like to say Skydome. Rogers Centre. Roberto Alomar is the commissioner of the league. He brought this tournament 5 years ago to give these young Canadian kids a chance to showcase their skills to scouts and colleges. And we saw some, it was an interesting weekend. I mean, just the, you know, the whole 1-1 count to start a game, just, you know, seven innings. It's a very different baseball looking at, you know, showcasing versus just a regular baseball game. Atlantic Maroon were the one that came out on top. I was kind of surprised about that, considering how they were to start the tournament. But as you found in Tournament 12, anything can happen. But this tournament is more about the individuals and which players were the surprise, and maybe some that were touted as the top players going into it, maybe not having the showcase that they wanted. What were your thoughts on the weekend, and maybe just like a player or someone that you saw that kind of caught your eye?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it was an awesome weekend. It's so great to see someone like Robbie Alomar step up, you know, and sort of stay local and help build baseball to grassroots level, and then all the way up until this showcase of some extremely talented young baseball players from this country. First off, it's just an incredible tournament, and second, yeah, it's like you said, it's a showcase first and a competition sort of second. So something I thought that was really cool with that team you touched on, the Atlantic Maroon, that ended up winning in the semifinals, they took on Ontario Green, who was, I guess, if there were to be a favorite in the tournament, they were probably a favorite. They had a lot of top ranked players.
Both Ontario teams were looked at as strong for the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they'd put up I can't remember the exact number, something like 28 runs in the four games that they played, Ontario Green did. And then in the semifinals, because it's a showcase tournament and the results are not everything, Carter Morris, who was a 15-year-old pitching for the Futures Navy team throughout the tournament, got a chance to pitch for Atlantic just because he was promised a second start, and he had a bit of a rough one in his first time around, so he's really excited to get back out there. Pitching for another team, went pitched unbelievably, four innings, just gave up two hits, struck out seven guys. He had his changeup working in full effect, and he was just lights out, and they ended up winning that game. Ontario Green had a bit of a run in the fifth inning, putting up four runs, but they held on for the 5-4 win, and Morris got the win there. So just things like that were really cool. And, you know, as much as Ontario Green, I'm sure those players would have loved to win the tournament, they didn't seem upset by, you know, they weren't making excuses or anything. Oh, he doesn't play for this team, or he shouldn't be allowed to pitch. They didn't really mind. Each individual, I think, knew that it was their time. For every at-bat, every ball hit to them, it was their time to show that their skills. And if their team won at the end of the game, then that was a good bonus. So,
yeah, I mean, for myself, I looked more towards the Pool B, which was Quebec, Futures Navy, which I was impressed with, and you got Atlantic. It was very, when I look at this weekend especially, the talent level there was, I mean, you see guys, I mean, you see the walks, you see the strikeouts, pitchers, it's tough starting with a 1-1 count. The hitting, not so much. I was expecting a little more hitting. I think there was only one home run in the tournament.
Yeah, Buckle. Ontario. Blake Buckle, I think is his name.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was more, I felt like this was more of a showcase for the pitching, especially. I mean, it's hard to for 15-year-olds to hit a ball out of the ballpark there, but I did see a couple of those in batting practice. The player that I interviewed for my player feature was Justin Thorstenson. It's a very tough last name to pronounce, but he's a 15-year-old from Langley, BC, so he's a BC native. He was playing for the Futures Navy. This guy was throwing 87 miles per hour as a lefty, 15 years old. And I was asking him about the pitch and asking him things he works on. It just seems like it just came naturally to him. And he said, like, one thing his pitch has was, like, a natural movement that you don't really see from righties, he said. Lefties sort of have this, like, lefty luck where their pitch just kind of breaks. You aim for down the middle, and it just breaks off to the left. And I found that so interesting. And like, this kid is only 15 years old. He's already committed to Oregon State, wow, which is one of the top NCAA programs, yep. I think top five, which at 15, he's expected to go in 2020. Obviously, things could change if he gets drafted and a team puts him in their minor league system. But I think he really seems to want to go to Oregon. Being from BC, he liked the program, liked the, you know, the way they did recruitment. So that's the sort of thing I was looking for in this term, just to find out that one story where somebody was highly touted, and he was highly touted going to this tournament, and just seeing him actually perform. He didn't have his best. He was solid for three innings. He was throwing a no-hitter. The fourth inning, he had a leg cramp, but he kept pitching, and he gave up a single, three walks. So the one run came in, and then when they took him out, I think it was Atlantic scored another, five runs on him. But just, you know, seeing him enjoy the tournament, getting a chance like this to come over and play, you know, in a big ballpark. These kids don't get to do it that often, especially here in Canada. So it was just a nice event to see. I think we got some good stories out of it as well. We're going to wrap up the show right now, but any final thoughts on Tournament 12? I think, Austin, you may have wanted to say something. We've been keeping you quiet this whole time.
Well, no, that's fine. They got cooped up a little bit. That's all right. I keep busy, so no worries.
But what did you – just kind of your final thoughts on the tournament, what you thought from what you watched?
I got to see a couple games. Unfortunately, both the times I was there, it was Ontario Black, so I can only really offer insight on one team. But their team was extremely good. I got to talk to Daniel Carinci, who he's the top infield prospect from Ontario.
He was one of them. I think Noah Naylor was another player that
he's the top uncommitted prospect
in Canada.
I'm not sure Canada, but Ontario.
At least Ontario.
Yeah, he's the top uncommitted. But he's in his graduation year, so he'll make a decision at some point, I would assume, in the near future. Noah Naylor was great to watch in person. I think. I saw him play catcher the first night, and then got to see him play third base in the second game that Ontario played against Ontario Green. So he's going to be an unbelievable talent. He's committed to Texas A&M. I would go ahead and assume that he's going to be drafted. He's had a lot of hype behind him since his brother Josh was taken in the first round a couple of years back by the Miami Marlins. Now he's a part of the San Diego organization. So we'll see what happens with him. But I think Noah, it's a safe bet that he's not going to spend a full 4 years at Texas A&M.
I think the one thing about this weekend is that it made us more conscious about where the talent is now in Canada. Before, nobody really ever talked about the Canadian game. We talked about, you know, the players down south, you know, Cubans, Dominicans, and, you know, the Japanese pitchers as well. We don't really get a chance to talk about the Canadian talent, because, you know, the Blue Jays have been playing, you know, they've been on the rise, and that's gotten a lot more kids interested in baseball. And now we're starting to see where that interest has led to, with these kids getting more involved, putting more time into baseball, because many of these kids, they'll play baseball in the summer months, and then right after that, it's hockey.
Exactly.
It's another, they're a multi-sport. I know. Yeah. I remember Bo Pulford's grandson was there. He plays both hockey and baseball. Mm-hmm. But for some of these kids, now that the Blue Jays are at that, you know, that peak moment, many of them are now seeing, oh, baseball is actually something I can maybe do. Or, you know, I'm a little more interested now in baseball than I was in hockey. So I think now we're starting to see that shift. And I think this tournament kind of shows with the talent that's been coming out of it now, especially the last couple of years, with some players getting drafted and some getting committed to other programs. We're going to wrap it up because we don't want to go over time, but we'll definitely come back with some more baseball talk. We'll be probably looking at hopefully some Jose Bautista moments to talk about. The Leafs are going to be playing some more preseason games this week, and then I think they have a couple more next week before they drop the puck. And we want to thank you all for joining us on game day. As your host, David Morrissey, I'm glad to bring you through this show. And Matt Teague and Austin Owens, we thank you guys and enjoy your week.